Welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass, What No One Tells You About Negotiating. Our guest today is Amy Trask, the author of You Negotiate Like a Girl, Reflections on a Career in the National Football League. Amy is the former CEO of the Oakland Raiders and a current football analyst for CBS Sports Network's That Other Pregame Show. In her book, You Negotiate Like a Girl, Amy explains how she started as an intern and worked her way up to become the highest-ranking female executive in the NFL. In today's teleclass, Amy will share her thoughts on how to work without regard for gender and how to interact with big and even intimidating personalities. Amy Trask, welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Same here. Amy, can you tell us first how you got started in the NFL and how you worked your way up to become the highest ranking female executive in the league?
I started as an intern while I was in graduate school. I placed a call to the organization and explained that I would like to be an intern. I was connected with a gentleman who said, "What's an intern?" because the organization had never had one. And I said, "I work for you, and you don't pay me." And he said, "Come on down." And that's how I began my career.
And how did you choose the NFL?
I have loved, dating back then, I had loved football forever, had been a fan of the game itself since I was a child. And then when I was an undergraduate student at Berkeley, the Raiders were just down the freeway in Oakland, and I fell in love with so much about the Raider organization. I returned to Los Angeles for graduate school the same year that the team moved to Los Angeles the second time. The team had tried to relocate 2 years earlier but had been ordered back to the court. And then the year I graduated Cal and moved back to Los Angeles for grad school, as I mentioned, the team moved down after having worked through that court process, and I thought, well, wow, my team's coming with me.
Oh, great. And how did you climb the ladder?
You know, I'll start by saying I never viewed it as a ladder, and I never set out to climb or to advance. And when I share that with people, it strikes them as very odd, and they look at me and in disbelief and articulate disbelief, but it's really the truth. I would have been thrilled to be part of the organization in any capacity. And as I said, I began my job as an intern. If my job with the organization had been to pick up the crumpled up cups on the sideline, I would have been thrilled to do that. So I never set out to advance. I simply learned about the organization. I had just a tremendous, tremendous interest in learning everything I could about every part of the organization. When I joined the organization full-time a year or so after my internship, it was as a young lawyer to work on transactional documents and contracts and things of that nature. But I wanted to know everything. I wanted to know how did the ticket office work and how did scouting work. And I walked throughout the organization. And as I shared in the book that you referenced, that was something that was there was a dim view of that by a lot of people, but not by the owner of the team. He saw what I was doing, and he started asking me about other parts of the organization. And that suggested to me two things. One, he knew what I was doing and was not displeased with what I was doing. And number two, I better know the answer when he asked me questions.
And we're talking about the legendary Al Davis here.
Right.
Okay. So could you tell us more about the male-dominated culture of the NFL, and what surprised you most about it?
Well, let me start by indicating that I understand the privilege that I had of working for a man who hired without regard to race, gender, religion, ethnicity, or any of the other individualities that have no bearing on whether someone can do a job or not. And I always preface my remarks with that comment because I realize that's a privilege not everyone has. So, yes, I understand that my experience was working for a man who was utterly unconcerned with my gender. He hired, fired, cussed at people without regard to any of the individualities I just mentioned. You know, my experience, and again, noting the organization in which I worked, was very, very different than that which I understand others have had. We hear about a locker room culture. I experienced none of that. And in fact, my experience with players throughout my almost 30 years in the league was that players evaluate their coworkers, their teammates, others throughout the organization based on ability. If you're the left guard, you evaluate the left tackle. Can he get his job done, or do I need to help him block his man? If you're a safety, you evaluate the corner. Can he cover his man, or do I need to give him help? And I felt that I was always evaluated based on merit. I never, ever went to a meeting, not an NFL owners meeting, not a meeting of Raider owners, not a football meeting, a coaching meeting, a municipal meeting, a banker's meeting, thinking about my gender. It always struck me as wrong for me to walk into a meeting expecting and hoping that others would not be thinking about my gender if I was thinking about my gender.
Got it. Now, you do write in your book about an incident at your first league meeting and how you diffused a cringeworthy moment with humor. Can you tell us a little more about this experience and what you took away from it?
Sure. And just to set the stage, if I may, that was in the mid-1980s, which, of course, was quite a while ago. And the gentleman with whom I had this interaction was at the time, I don't know his exact age, but let's say it was roughly 60. So when you stop and put this in context, you have someone who, roughly 60, back in the mid-80s. My point being, the rules of the game changed on him partway through his career as relates to inclusiveness and diversity. But it was my very, very first league owners meeting. There had never before been in a league owners meeting a woman who was not the wife or the daughter of a team owner. So at all league owners meetings, you walk in, and in the back of the room, there's coffee and breakfast set up, and people mix and mingle before the meeting starts. So I walked in, and that was going on, and I walked to the back of the room and was with the other assembled owners. It was what was called a two-per-club meeting. So there was an owner and an executive from each club. And one of the men turned to me and asked me to get him coffee. And I quickly realized I was the only woman in the room who was not part of the hotel catering staff. So I just sort of immediately decided I was going to have fun with it. And let me take a moment to say, I believe in the adage, to thine own self be true. Not everybody would want to have fun with a moment like this. I wanted to have fun with it. And without thinking, I did just that. I looked at him and I said, sure, how do you take that? Because I knew within moments the meeting was going to start, and this gentleman was going to see me walk into that seating area in the room and sit myself right down next to the owners and the executive from each club. So I said, sure, how do you take that? And he told me, and I handed it to him. And then the meeting started, was called to order. I walked in, and I sat down in my seat, which was very close to him. And to watch the color drain from his face and to look at the expression on his face, all I could do was giggle. And the fact is that owner ultimately, well, very, very immediately, but ultimately and throughout my almost 30 years in the league, was one of my staunchest supporters. He encouraged me every step of the way. And I had a lot of fun with it because every once in a while, I would remind him he didn't tip me, which I, you know, how could you not tip me, right? And I will tell you that throughout the next 30 years, he would often say to me, can I get you coffee? So we had a lot of fun with it. And, you know, I didn't do that really for any reason other than that's the way I thought it would be a lot of fun to approach that situation.
Well, that was some very quick thinking. I want to move on to your book. And what is it you mean by your expression, you negotiate like a girl?
Well, during my career, and I explain the interaction, you know, in some detail in the book. I won't bog you down right now with all the details, but we, the Raiders, were in the midst of a very, very significant business transaction, one that I think was the most, or one of the most important transactions, probably the most important transaction on which I ever worked. And I will quickly say, because many will assume it had to do with stadiums or the team location, that is not the topic that we were addressing. But it was a very, very significant business transaction. And Al was tense and just, there was so much stress and tension surrounding this transaction. He was tense. I was tense. We were at one another's throats. He was not pleased with the manner in which I was handling some of the negotiations. He was not pleased with the pace of the negotiations. We were fighting constantly about the deal. And at one point when I updated him on some negotiations, he just sort of spat out, "You negotiate like a girl." And I looked at him and I said, "Well, then negotiate it yourself." And he got mad, and I don't want to negotiate. You know, the end of the story is he didn't want to negotiate it. He wanted the girl to negotiate it. And, you know, the reason that didn't bother me and the reason I was able to respond as I did was, here's a man who hired me without regard to gender, who advanced me throughout my career to the point where I was his chief executive officer without regard to gender, who treated me in every regard without regard to gender. So when he just sort of spat, "You negotiate like a girl," I laughed. And I told him to negotiate it himself. And the fact is, he didn't want to negotiate it himself. And when we ultimately consummated the transaction, it could not have been a better deal for the club. It was absolutely just a spectacular deal. And I, you know, teased him periodically about having let the girl negotiate it.
Well, what are the preconceptions about the way women negotiate?
I don't know that. I mean, look, I don't think Al had any. I think that was just a moment of anger. Clearly, if he did have preconceptions or he was concerned, he wouldn't have been allowing or requesting or demanding that I negotiate this. I have my own views about negotiation, and I think that negotiation needs to be defined quite differently than many define it. And I talk about that at some length in the book as well. I think that everybody should be able to approach a negotiation in the manner in which he or she feels best. And I will repeat, to thine own self be true when you are negotiating.
Okay. So, I think a lot of women, especially those just starting their careers, are worried about being polite and accommodating, and they don't want to be seen as strident or demanding, and negotiations, as you know, can be very tough. But a lot of women, are programmed to want to be liked. So how do you recommend that women, keep that professional armor and remain on good terms with their coworkers, while at the same time asserting themselves and getting what they want out of a negotiation?
I'm smiling ear to ear because there were times I probably would have been better off had I tried to be a little bit more polite or a little bit nicer. I failed in that regard in some instances. You know, my experience was throughout my career and throughout my current career, both on air and also with the Big Three Basketball League, there are women that I find that embrace those qualities you described, and there are men who do as well. There are women who would be well advised to go in a bit of a different direction, and so too with men. I don't know that those are always gender specific points, but to your point, I would simply say comport yourself in the manner that feels right to you in the moment. There may be times where being assertive and tough and impolite is appropriate. There may be times that it is appropriate. I think I garbled that, but my point is I think it's situational. Be the person that you believe is most effective in any situation.
Okay. So you talked about Al Davis, you know, being very accepting of you and others, and you know, basically judging people on their performance rather than on some, you know, characteristic. But what advice do you have for someone, you know, most likely a woman, who doesn't receive that same level of support from their male superiors as you did from Al Davis?
And you know, again, I'll note that it was a privilege that I had that I'm well aware not everyone has. And I would suggest do your job and be the best at your job. You know, I'm asked all the time, do I believe I was tested because I was a woman? And my answer is, you know, I don't know, maybe. Let's say I was. Well, what is the best answer when anyone is tested for any reason? Pass the damn test. So my advice is do your job. Do your job as well as you can. Work hard. Work really, really hard. And when you think you can't work any harder, find a way to work harder. Because if you can demonstrate your worth and you can demonstrate your value, then when there's a moment in your business where your supervisor or superior needs to shine, that should come through. And look, I'm not naive to the fact that that is not always the case for all women. You can't necessarily change someone's preconceived notions before they meet you and work with you. But what you can do is demonstrate excellence at all times in an effort to prove your worth. So my answer is focus on being the best you can be and focus on being better than all your colleagues at what you do and working harder than they do.
Okay. So dance backwards in high heels.
Well, by the way, I would give that same advice to young men. I mean, in other words, you know, my view is a business that does not hire, promote, advance, evaluate people without regard to gender, race, ethnicity, religion is a business that deserves to fail, because by definition, they're excluding broad swaths of capable individuals. Now, I get it. Some businesses do that. What we can do is demonstrate how good we are to those with whom we work.
Got it. Now, you were a pioneer in the NFL. Did you see other women following in your footsteps? You know, is there now a little squad of women who work in the NFL?
There are some really terrific women working in the NFL. And as I said, when I started, I was the only one in the room. Now the room has quite a few terrific women populating it. Jeannie Bonk is the CFO and EVP of the Los Angeles Chargers. Hannah Gordon, general counsel of the San Francisco 49ers. Those are two examples that come to mind immediately. Those women do a tremendous job, and they are valued by their organizations and by the owners of their club. I know that the 49ers value Hannah Gordon. I know that the Los Angeles Chargers value Jeannie Bonk. Those women have been there for a while, and they have risen to decision-making senior positions, and they do a magnificent job. There are others, but those are two that are at the top of my list.
Got it. Now, did you feel pressure during your time, particularly as the sole woman, to be a role model for others? Was that on your mind?
You know, I don't know that I've ever been comfortable using the word role model. When people asked me or suggested to me I was a role model, I cringed a little bit because, you know, that seemed a little bit self-aggrandizing to me. I do believe that it is the job of every leader in business to do his or her best to assist those who are coming after him or her. That's what leaders do. They help develop others. You know, finally, a woman I know in the media looked at me and said, stop it. Just stop it already. Quit telling people you're not a role model, because whether you are comfortable thinking that you are, you are. I've never felt comfortable using that phrase because it just seems rather conceited to me. But if by doing what I did, I led by example, well then that's neato.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So I should have asked you, you know, what pressure did you feel being perceived as a role model? Did you think, you know, I have to be perfect. I have to be better than everyone else. I have to, you know, do cartwheels and double flips through the air to prove myself. Did you feel like people were watching you in a way that they didn't watch your male colleagues?
No, I never sensed that for a moment. And I think there may be a few reasons for that. Number one, perhaps I'm just oblivious to that. If other people were judging me or looking to me to be better than males in order to prove myself, I didn't care. And so, you know, it was probably a willful obliviousness. I just never thought about it. I thought about doing my job the best way I could do my job and achieving results as best I could. I really and truly didn't spend one moment thinking about my gender. Look, as I said earlier, I never went into a meeting thinking about the fact that I was a woman. You know, it just didn't seem smart to me, or it didn't seem to make sense for me to expect or hope that others wouldn't think about my gender if I was thinking about my gender. But beyond that, I didn't spend a moment thinking about my gender. And if others chose to, well, then guess what? Advantage me. Because if other people were going to worry about my gender or fret about my gender or think about my gender, well, let them waste their time. I wasn't going to waste my time thinking about it.
Got it. Now, you talked about your belief that the job of every leader is to bring up those who are coming next as leaders. Could you talk a little bit more about your mentoring philosophy, how you do work with the people coming up, whether male or female, what you teach them, what's acceptable, what's not in your book, in terms of, helping them learn what failure is, what success is?
Sure. And by the way, my view that it is the responsibility of business leaders to be cultivating, if you will, the next group of business leaders is very, very practical in nature. And as I used to say to staff regularly, and as I now say in my current career, any one of us can be hit by a truck on any day. And that was my way of articulating, we need to make sure as leaders that we have in place others who can step in and assume our responsibilities if we are hit by that proverbial truck. There need to be successors in place, because otherwise you're not doing what's right for the business, which is making sure that it can run seamlessly. So, every business leader, without regard to gender, has a responsibility to the organization for which she or he works to be cultivating that next group of leaders in case, you are hit by that truck or choose to leave, et cetera. And I did that without regard to gender as well. I feel very, very good about the fact that when I chose to leave the Raider organization, I left behind the next group of leaders, men and women that I hired who are now in senior roles with the organization. That's the responsibility of a business leader without regard to gender.
So you are able to work, it seems like, quite well, you know, without focusing on gender. But what is your recommendation for women who feel that it is exactly because of their gender that they are treated unfairly or differently in the workplace? What do they do?
Well, I'm going to hearken back to that which I said earlier, which is to thine own self be true. And the reason I say that is each person has to address that situation in the manner that she feels most comfortable addressing it. I know that I would be very, very direct about it. I have been told that I am direct to a fault. Now, I don't buy that there's such a thing as direct to a fault. I think the world would be a lot better if more people were very, very direct and we didn't have to sort of try to interpret or intuit what someone meant. So, you know, my suggestion would be approach it directly, handle it directly, deal with it directly, as opposed to indirectly or, you know, subtly. But that is not a style or an approach with which everyone feels comfortable. So I'm
right.
always very I'm very cautious about telling someone, this is what you must do, because if someone doesn't feel capable or comfortable doing that, then it's the wrong solution for them. My approach, if I were confronted with that, would be to be very direct about it and say, hey, this is what I perceive is occurring. May we have a conversation about this? Because either A, I'm right, this is occurring and we need to address it, or B, I'm misinterpreting you, in which case I'm going to give you a chance to tell me that, or, you know, we've got an issue here as to how we're communicating. Let's approach this directly and figure out what to do, because the status quo, if that was what it was, is not okay with me.
Okay, so yeah, that does take a lot of assertiveness. Obviously, it would behoove younger women to, you know, achieve that level of assertiveness, but, you know, it is hard at the beginning of one's career.
Of course it is, and I don't mean to suggest it isn't. And by the way, there can be negative repercussions when one is that assertive. I was simply always willing to accept negative repercussions from my assertiveness. And no, I didn't deal with some of the issues you're describing, but there were instances in my career where I was more assertive than others thought was wise. And there were sometimes negative results from that, and I was willing to accept them.
Got it. We have time for about one last question. And what would you say, let's say the key, maybe three lessons that you hope your readers will take away from You Negotiate Like a Girl?
Oh, wow.
In any
one,
order. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. And, you know, one would be, to thine own self be true. Don't let anyone tell you how you should comport yourself, how you should react in a particular situation, how you should handle a negotiation, how you should do any part of your job. Make sure you do it in a manner that feels right to you. And another point I would make is work hard. Work really, really hard. When you think you can't work any harder, find a way to work harder. There is an expression nowadays, work smart. You know what? Fine, work smart, but it's not a substitute for working hard. We can do both. And the final would be, do your job without regard to gender. Be the best you can be without spending a moment focused on your gender. I'm not suggesting others won't focus on your gender, but if they want to waste their time and their effort and their energy thinking about your gender, let them waste their time, effort, and energy. Advantage you if you focus on getting the job done.
Great advice. Thank you. That is all we have time for today. A reminder that today's teleclass will be available as a podcast on your conference website. If you registered through Eventbrite, you'll receive an email telling you when the podcast is available. Our thanks to Amy Trask. The book is You negotiate like a girl. Thank you all for listening.